Hi, guys.
What's up?
Adam, you're complaining during the intro music.
What's that?
You were complaining during the intro music.
Yeah, I know. It's fine.
It's fine.
I'm looking for hot dog buns at a Meijer on the way to Mid Ohio.
How's that going?
What's that?
How's that going?
It's been a long day so far. We lost a trailer hub. Luckily, I had one. But man, getting that inner race off was a trick.
I've had that problem before.
Yeah, Derek's been down this road. So.
I'm pretty sure if that happened to me, I would not know what to do.
I knew exactly what to do, and I didn't have all the tools, but I got it done. So,
yeah.
So far, so good.
If you catch it early enough, I did not, and I welded the inner race to the stub.
I mostly caught it early enough. If I probably would have gone like another mile or two, it would have been totally borked. It would have been terrible.
I should probably watch some YouTube videos on how to repair trailer wheels because I don't know anything.
It's so simple.
Yeah, it's really not hard.
Yeah.
You could say that about anything once you learn how to do it.
If Yarbrough Racing can do it, anyone can do it.
So, Derek, smooth sailing so far from Austin. I don't want to jinx you.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm not towing anything, so just the eco booze is eco boozing. I actually got 24 miles per gallon for like the first 4 hours at 75, which is really good. I had like a 12 mile an hour tailwind.
Now, I'd always heard some people complain about those EcoBoost turbos burning oil. Does yours do that?
It does not burn oil. Not a drop.
That's pretty awesome.
Yep, it does not burn oil. I do have a slight coolant leak somewhere that they cannot find. And it's like, it's super light. Like every 3,000 or 4,000 miles, you can see, I marked the level with a Sharpie, so you can see it drop a little. And then when I was towing with it in the hills, if I started going fast, it'd get a little hot. I mean, these trucks have a high coolant pressure, so you can get them like 240 and it doesn't really do anything.
Does it have a gauge that actually tells you numbers or no?
Depends on what trim you have. Mine doesn't, but the higher trim level ones will start to tell you after 225.
Okay.
It will like come up on the electric thing.
Well, but if you're not noticing drip like on the ground, are you sure it's not just being burned?
No, it's not being burned. It's a leak.
It's probably seeping somewhere and then boiling hot.
There's a shitload of coolant like connections on these trucks. They got a big thermostat housing. And they got the coolant goes through the turbos. There's a million places it can like have a little leak and evaporate before they catch it. But I mean, they put it under pressure at the Ford dealership and it held. They put dye in it. They told me to drive it for a long time and bring it back and then see if they can find it.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But I just hadn't had time to bring it back. I mean, it's like it's not really affecting anything. So, but yeah, it's pretty crazy how sensitive these are to wind. Like, my diesel didn't really care. Like, it always got the same miles per gallon no matter what. But this truck will get 21 or 21 and a half going 70 into the wind. And with the wind, it'll go 24 miles per gallon.
Really? That's a big difference.
Super sensitive, yeah. But it's real comfy. I slept in it last night, so.
That back seat is huge, man.
Yep. It's like just long enough for me at 6 foot. You'd be pretty cramped, but
yeah, I'm only 6'2". I'm not that tall.
Yeah, but my feet kind of go right. I lay diagonal and my feet kind of hook right behind the passenger seat. Like I'm just short enough.
And the
that's
back.
I'm
like,
really surprised how big
flat.
The back seat is. Sorry, I
What'd
stepped
you say,
on.
Abe?
It said the back seat folds completely flat.
It folds up, yeah. Like the back seats tilt up towards the seat back, you know, the back of the seats, and then it leaves a flat floor.
So my truck, when I had it, had like kind of a raised hump in the center, like where the exhaust and drive shaft would be, and it made laying on the floor not comfortable.
It wasn't high,
but it was just high enough.
Yeah, that sucks. This one's completely flat, and I got one of those camping pads, you know, the way you just like roll out and kind of air up themselves or whatever.
Yeah,
and it's perfect back there, so it was nice and comfy.
Does it like get hot and sweaty?
No, I left the truck idle.
I got my ice from a supercharger. Sorry, I wasn't paying attention for a minute.
How many pounds?
22 pounds of ice.
How many races is that good for?
I don't know. We'll find out. Not going to be that hot this week.
Can you put dry ice in there?
I don't think that would. Abe, you might know better. Like, when you put dry ice in water, does it cool the water or does it just?
Oh, yeah. Depending on how much you put in, it would probably freeze the water.
That's my thought. It's like, I don't want to turn it into ice.
If you really wanted to do a thing that was questionable, what you would do is you would put dry ice, and instead of water through the cooling loop, you would use like ethanol or rubbing alcohol, because those don't freeze like water does. If you did like ethanol, you could probably get the temperature of the liquid down to like minus 70 Celsius, which is pretty freaking cold.
Well, that's a really good idea, Abe.
Well, except for the fact that it'd be flammable.
It would probably like wreck the pump, though, stuff, wouldn't it?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I think it might not work.
It might work. The only thing you would want to do is like... I could probably design something that would work, but the only thing you would want to do is make sure you're not letting the bubbles from the dry ice as it evaporates to go into your system and cavitate, right? So
it's got a bleed off. I have like a looped hose for a bleed off. I'm actually getting in the RV right now, so a looped hose for a bleed off in the tank. But
what about just using antifreeze?
I mean, you could do that too. Yeah.
I don't know if that would actually cool the Laminova cores as well, though.
We should do some experiments.
I bet it wouldn't.
But. I bet you could get those IHEs down to below ambient if you tried. That'd be fine if you were like trying to make power, but you're not. So.
I don't know. Did I talk about this? Like, it actually works. I don't actually want to make more power. I just want to make power the entire time.
Yeah, Adam, I can't hear you very well.
Did I talk about how it's fixed? Because I was an idiot and it wasn't actually broken.
Because it was in Celsius and you or Fahrenheit, and you thought it was in Celsius.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe
that it actually was working.
Well, I mean, it's exciting that it's not a problem. So.
Bad area for cell service. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Am I still here?
You don't sound great.
I don't think it's going to work for me. I'll get a little ways down the road and call you guys back. You keep talking. Derek, regale us with your stories. So,
yeah. Adam, just join this call when you can.
I'll sign back on in a minute.
Okay.
So where are you currently, Derek?
I'm through Memphis. Let me look. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah, you did the thing that I absolutely can no longer do because I am old. You drove through the night and you stopped at 6 a.m. for a nap.
Yeah, I'm almost to Jackson. Jackson, Mississippi, I guess, right? I'm kind of a night owl anyway. So that was 6 a.m. your time, 5 a.m. my time. So I regularly stay up to like 3 a.m. anyway, and I don't ever go to work until like 10 or 11. And so for me, it was just like pushing a couple extra hours.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so no big deal.
And your wife's not traveling with you, so is and Axel's not with you, right?
No, solo.
Man, yeah, it'd be hard to be entertained for that long, just like cruising at night. Do you listen to other podcasts, or what do you do while you drive?
Listen to podcasts.
What about?
Listen. I mean, I like a bunch of them. I listen to Rogan, and I listen to some comedy podcasts. There's one I like called King and the Sting with Theo Vaughn, who's my favorite comedian, and Brendan Schaub. He's a comedian, but used to be a UFC fighter.
I realize that the Rogan podcast is like the most popular podcast in existence. I have never listened.
I've been listening since 2000 and probably 15.
Man, that's a long time.
Yeah, and I haven't missed an episode. So listen to all of them.
That's so many.
He just did one with Post Malone this week, and they talked about Lambo doors, and it made me think of Adam.
Excellent.
Because Post Malone has a 92 Explorer with Lambo doors, the giant wheels.
Nice. Yeah, I'm actually a pretty big fan of donks and donk culture. On occasion, I see one rolling around in India, and it just makes me happy.
Yeah, they're pretty sweet. I like the Houston Slabs. It stands for slow, loud, and banging.
Nice.
And they take like 80s caddies and stuff like that, and they put the wire wheels on them that poke out really far.
Cool.
They call them pokers and swangers, and that's like a big Houston thing. That's
I
like
love
Houston
every
dog.
Part of this.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I also like lowriders, which like I don't really want to own a donk or a slab, but I definitely would like to own a lowrider, like at least sometime in my life.
You can make that happen.
Like training day, like the old Monte Carlo, all black on the silver Daytons.
So. You and I talked before we started recording about the route that you're taking. Are you going through Indy or are you going to go through Cincy?
I think Cincy. Indy takes longer. Let's see.
So, as many of you know, both Derek and I really enjoy drinking bourbon. And I asked Derek if he was going to stop at Party Source, which happens to be like maybe the best place in the country to buy liquor. If not the country, certainly in the Midwest, it's like the place. And, well, you're poor right now because you're trying to save money to buy a house. So I understand.
Yeah.
But if you ever make the trip, this is an advertisement for them for free because that place is amazing. If you drink bourbon, especially if you drink bourbon that can sometimes be hard to find, they have it. They have everything all the time.
Hell yeah.
So the,
I also have enough bourbon to last me a really long time right now. I went a little crazy during COVID and bought a lot of bourbon.
So when I still lived in Ohio, which was like 6 years ago, I hosted a bourbon tasting at my house. And before the party, I went to Party Source in Cincy to buy a bunch of stuff for the event. And I think I bought like 14 or 15 bottles at the time and ended up getting a bunch of stuff that like they typically don't have on the shelf at your like regular liquor store. And besides then, I think I've only bought like a bottle or two. I still have plenty of stuff from back then. So I don't often buy liquor anymore.
There you go.
I think that really just means I should drink more.
That also. I haven't been heavy on, it's so hot right now, and we've been going to the water a lot. I haven't been real heavy on the bourbon lately. I've been drinking pina coladas and seltzers.
Nice.
Trying to either get me some mixed rum or trying to watch the carbs.
So, GLTC is what you like talking about. I heard, and this is a word on the street, I heard that Andy Smedgard's building another car that is going to work harder at being better optimized for GLTC. Obviously, we're probably not going to see Houghton at an event anytime soon while the border is closed. Is there anyone that's going to be challenging Aaron Lichty this weekend? You think, is Cattell racing?
Yeah, Cattell's racing. Because it will be fast and probably challenge Lichty.
Okay.
And we'll see. DJ got new suspension, so I expect him to be fast. He has stickers for the weekend.
That sounds good. He just did a thing with, what was it, Spec Miata and Winding Road. How did that go? Do you know?
Spec MX-5. I think he did pretty good. I can't remember where he finished, but there was, they had some paid drivers and they had some drivers that were invited by winding road from different things, and he got, you know, he finished best out of all those drivers. But his weekend kind of got borked a little bit because someone didn't have the transponder on correctly, and so he didn't have a qualifying time. So he had to start from the back.
Well, I can say from my experience, and probably you can say the same, you know, going to events like this, if you're not used to, like, very, very specific pre-race checks, it's so easy to forget something like that, which is, like, such a small detail, but yeah. So important.
Well, I mean, he was arrive and drive, so, I mean, that shit should have been handled, you know?
Yeah, but, I guess that's true, but... I can think of the number of times that I've screwed up on track or like forgotten to do something just because it was like, oh man, I got to get ready. And then like made a dumb mistake. I don't know how that, does that happen to you?
Yeah, sometimes. I'm pretty diligent with that kind of stuff. I put a lot of thought into pre-race stuff. I try to get stuff ready. I know I'm kind of slow at getting ready, so I try to get everything, you know, in line. I don't have to rush. So they were on board with like the Super Tour, SCCA Super Tour at Road Atlanta. Are you familiar with those?
Kind of. Tell me about it.
So, you know, SCCA has the runoffs, right? That's their big championship. Been going on forever.
Right.
And they have their regional events, but they also have these Super Tour events, and they're like, I guess, semi-national. Where they break the country up into larger regions, and then they hold Super Tours across the different conferences or regions or whatever. So this is one of those. So this is like one of the big SCCA events, and so they only get two races. And it kind of sucked because they're supposed to be like 25, 30 minute races, and both of them had wrecks about midway through, and then they finished under yellow flag.
Dang.
So it's kind of bummer, but you know, but still, I mean, DJ got to, you know, he won it from a sim racing competition and got to go drive a car, so at Road Atlanta, can't complain about that.
So speculate with me for a minute. All other things being equal, I obviously we knew that Houghton was going to be really competitive at COTA. Do you think that formula or that style and approach would work well at a place like Mid-Ohio?
Yeah, I do. I think Houghton's going to catch everybody by surprise, and I've been saying it, and people don't quite believe me that weren't at COTA, weren't on track with that car.
Yeah, that's true.
That thing's a freight train, and it's going to be real hard to race against.
So how has that affected your race strategy? Like, Would you consider trying to drive your car without the taking the aerodynamic wing penalty?
No, because I don't really care that much about winning. I'm trying to have fun, and the car's more fun to drive with the wing on it. So,
well, it seems like it'd be more lively without a wing. Isn't lively more fun?
No, not for me. I like grip.
Okay.
So, yep. So I prefer the wing, and I've tested my car with and without the wing, and I think some cars are more doable. You know, like the Miatas, they kind of produce lift in the back OEM, and so other cars are better without a wing. But I mean, I think that the wing makes a big difference on my car. I think I could get away with like a NASCAR spoiler, but I just don't really care that much. Hey, Adam.
Hey, Derek and Abe.
What's up, buddy?
I can hear you.
We were just talking about whether Derek should take the wing off his car to see if he goes faster. Yeah, Adam, we can hear you.
My reception.
Luke just tested this last weekend, too, by the way. Like a real test.
What was the conclusion of the test?
So the conclusion was... they were both the same, so he set the car up for no wing, ran the car with the wing and without the wing. They were the same speed, within a tenth. But the car pushed real bad with the wing. So he loosened it up a little bit more, and then it went faster with the wing.
Faster lap times or faster? Like, faster I'm curious time. To know, what did he take a top speed penalty with the addition of the wing?
1 to 2 mile an hour.
That's kind of small.
Only, and only in high speed corners or high speed straights. So the straights that were under 100 mile an hour, it shows no difference.
Interesting.
The difference was only over 20 mile an hour. Now, and that's with the weight too. So like he added the weight when he put the wing in to make it GLDC spec, right?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so he went 1.5 seconds faster with the wing once he dialed it in. But that's not a true GLTC comparison because you wouldn't run no wing if you were trying to build to the rules. You'd run an NASCAR spoiler. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And
yeah.
So I do think that the rules are pretty good, and I do think that if he would have tested a NASCAR spoiler with the weight out versus the wing, it would have been really similar in lap time.
What do you think, Adam? Adam's not here again. What a waste.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess we're mildly entertaining. He does add a lot of flavor to the podcast, though.
A little bit. So, I mean, what do you think is stopping other people who are trying to be faster from trying to copy Houghton's formula?
I don't know. I think you might see some more of that after he runs. I mean, there weren't that many people at COTA, so...
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And also, that was the first weekend on that car. James wasn't on his correct shocks. He didn't have brake vents. His brakes were getting hot. I mean, like, and even Adam was like, oh, that car is running as fast as it's going to run. I'm like, hell no. I mean, he's got two or three more seconds left in that car, potential-wise, if he goes back to COTA.
Probably so. True. The other thing... that is, I think, is exciting about the way that Houghton's approached it is he's really doing like the time attack style reading of the rule book. And so he's doing some things that like don't immediately seem obvious, but it makes a lot of sense after he describes it, right? Like the way the front is designed on the car and like, oh, that's pretty clever. So,
I mean, it's big old air dam. I mean, they're not revolutionary about the air dam, except for he put it in CFD.
I think the way that the radiator is mounted and angled is significant.
I mean, he's not the first person to do that, though. I mean, there's plenty of other club race cars that are set up like that.
That's true.
He didn't do anything revolutionary. He just did it well. And honestly, like from the rules perspective, I would say that we might have gave the street car too much because we wanted to see somebody do it so we could dial it in, right? Because if it's nothing but mid-pack people running street tires, you don't know what the potential is, right? You don't know where their driving is. You don't know. You can't make rules off mid-pack people. You have to make the rules off the people at the front because those are the ones that are driving hard. And they're fair comparisons, right? Yeah.
Well, and I think you see that in time attack too, where often our goal is to make the competition as even as possible. And people sometimes reach out to me or Adam to say, oh, you've got to ban XYZ because what if someone does this? And historically, the way Adam and I have approached it is that it's not really a problem until it's a problem, right? Like if... Yeah. If you wrote a rule book about all of the things that people might do to torture the rule book, then you don't build that culture of like engineering and innovation that I think a lot of racers enjoy.
And I would say that in GLDC, I think we want a little bit more focus on the driver than the build. And time attack is like a little more build.
Well, I think it's both, especially in GLTC. I think it's both because at the moment, I don't think that there is there's not like it's not a spec series. Right. And the variety of builds show that like the way you do things can matter, but also a lot of different cars can be competitive.
Yeah, there's just not as many tools in your toolbox in the rule set, you know. There's arrows way more limited and, you know, it's low power, small tires. So, it's going to be fun this weekend though. I think we're going to have a really competitive field and racing for 3 days. It's going to be live stream, so I'm super excited. I'm sad I'm not racing, but I'm super excited.
Watching GLTC at Mid-Ohio has always been, I mean, was certainly cool last year because it's such a great place for wheel-to-wheel, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that track's awesome.
And yeah, I would say my viewing angle from the pits isn't always the best, but it'll be my first weekend at the track. I did go a day trip to Honda Meet a few weeks ago, but it'll be nice to be out and just, like, enjoy the weekend.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I bet you've been trapped inside.
For what seems like forever.
Baby duty.
She's baby, doing good, baby, though. Baby so, duty. Except she's pooping on everything. We had an issue last night. Man, it was gross.
Yeah, we cannot go into that. Hey, question.
Yeah.
What's the Mid-Ohio shower situation like? Do you have any idea? Because I'm sleeping in my truck.
If I remember, there are showers. I don't remember them being hot.
Fantastic. Well, which if Adam sucks. Ever comes back, I'm going to let him know that I'll probably be showering in his bus if there's no hot water.
Yeah, I'm bringing my RV and my question to myself. So I don't have an anode in the water heater, which makes the water smell terrible. And so I'm trying to decide if I just want to, like, get up early tomorrow and shower before I have a family thing back home in the morning. I'm trying to decide if I just, like, want to rough it until Sunday when I get home or if I want to shower in the RV. Because at the moment, I haven't de-winterized it. Even though people took it to Autobahn, no one used any water. So if I de-winterize it, then I got to do it again.
Then you got to do what again?
Winterize it in the fall. But I was talking with Adam.
It's the middle of summer. You'll use it quite a bit more than in a year.
I guess it depends, right? I may not drive it to Pikes Peak. And, I mean, the place that will probably certainly use it is Road America, which is in September.
Yeah.
But I hope by then to have a tankless water heater set up. Adam sent me a link for what he's using, and he said it was stupid simple to use and to install.
How much was his?
Like $400.
Pretty high.
Yeah, but not having a 6 gallon water tank limit would be nice.
Oh yeah, definitely worth it. Is it electric?
Electric and gas, I think.
Electric and gas.
Yep. So probably good for us, and we'll see how it goes. But you know, like, RV showers are not a place you want to stay in forever. But having water that doesn't smell terrible would be nice.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, dude. The shower, I mean, that's the whole point of having an RV. If you don't use your bathroom, you might as well sleep in an enclosed trailer.
That's true. That is true. I do have a really nice bed, though, which I enjoy.
Yeah. I want to build one. I want an RV, but, you know, looking at buying a house and everything like that, I don't know. Probably
you
not
should
in
just
car
buy an RV and live in that. I tried to convince Ashley, but she said no.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
So we're probably going to sell our place in Zionsville and move to a place that's a little bit cheaper. But I told her we should just buy a plot of land and put hookups on it and then buy an RV while we build a house. She didn't like the idea.
Yeah. I could get divorced and do that, but not being married. It's not going to happen.
Probably not.
Yeah. I mean, that's quite a thing with the dogs too.
Yeah, well, my dog just had, I think you've heard me complain about it on the show before, but like 4 or 5 months ago, we complained to the vet that we were pretty worried about her because we were worried that she injured her leg again. And they were like, they took some x-rays and they were like, no, she's fine, blah, 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 she'll get over it. Well, fast forward to them doing an exploratory surgery on Tuesday, and because she still hasn't recovered. And the surgeon called us and they were like, yeah, her meniscus is basically exploded. Like, it was so bad that, you know, she's going to have arthritis sooner because of all this. And it's like, you know, I'm frustrated at the vet that they wouldn't listen to us. And I'm frustrated that she was in pain for 5 months while they were continuing to not listen to us. But she's recovering now. She's just, she's pretty limpy.
Dang, that's not good. I mean, well, it's good she's recovering now, but that's not good that they didn't catch it for so long.
Yeah, and they like they took an X-ray because we were on it pretty quick, and they took an X-ray and they didn't see anything. And then after about a month, it wasn't getting better, and we were like, "Hey, would you guys do another X-ray?" And they were like, "Oh, it's not necessary." And it was only because we were persistent that they wanted to do the surgery, and well, they found a messed up knee.
We'll be bringing Axel to Colorado.
I don't know if Ashley's going to travel with me to that one or not. I would prefer to have the RV with me, but to make that drive by myself would suck.
Yeah, I do it. Whatever.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I would be happy to take the RV on shorter trips, but I don't know that I've had a deep dive into all the mechanicals on it to make a drive that's like 20 hours each way.
Yeah, and that's part of why I'm like thinking it's going to be a while before I get an RV, because I don't want an old one because I do such long tows. Like, if I get one, I want like one that's like 2 or 3 years old, you know, where it's like, because I can fix the plumbing, I can fix the electric, I can fix the crap in the RV that breaks, but I don't want to mess with the motor or transmission, you know?
Yeah, same here. Only because like a huge difference, one of many differences between Adam and I is, you know, he has one, the mechanical aptitude to fix stuff, but two, like he has jacks and jack stands and things that are big enough to work on a large vehicle. And yeah. I don't have any of that stuff.
Speaking of, I have a bet with him for this weekend. So I had a problem. I'm bringing my diff with me and my axles with me. And we talked about it on the last show, because my diff is going to Lee Walter, Walter Motorsports, to get a new final drive and the Geiken tune. And my axles are going to Luke to get built into RX-8 axles. And I couldn't get my damn axle nut off. I mean, that thing was, like, it was stuck. My driver's side one come off easy. No, my passenger side come off easy. And my driver's side one would not come off. I got a little impact. It's probably like 150 foot-pound impact I use for my wheels. And it wouldn't do it. I got Alex in the car, and she held the brakes, and I stood on a half inch drive ratchet, and it wouldn't break loose.
So what'd you do? So what did you end up doing?
Well, I ended up posting on Facebook if anybody in Austin had a Milwaukee Impact I could borrow.
See, that's what I bought. I mean, this is kind of an old design now, but I had the older Craftsman battery impacts, and they're like, they're fine for taking wheels off, but that's about it. And my air compressors, I don't really like using. And so when I had to take axles off of the Evo, it was a pain in the neck, because you need like, often if something's been on there forever, you need like 600 foot pounds or more. And so I bought the Milwaukee one, and I kind of love it.
So I don't know which one you got, but I borrowed it from our good buddy Andy Hollis, because he just lived about 15 minutes from me.
No kidding.
And I went to Andy said he's got one, which actually, like, I don't even race cars in Austin much, but I had multiple different people offer me. You know, Andy was just the closest. And he's usually home, too, so it made it easy to go pick it up and stuff. So, he's either traveling the world or our country, you know, or he's home. So anyway, I went and got it, and the one he let me borrow is the 2.7, 6.7. It's a half inch drive, 1400 pound.
Yeah, dude.
Breakaway torque. Is that the one you have?
I think so.
Dude, this thing was amazing.
It's so easy.
I swear. I mean, I'm talking, like, I'm 205 pounds right now. I've been dieting, 206 pounds. And I stood on that half-inch ratchet, and I like to break the ratchet. I mean, I swear I felt it bending under my feet. I don't have a breaker bar, so I couldn't try that. And eventually, I was bouncing on it. I bounced on it so hard that I moved the wheel with Alex holding the brake.
That doesn't surprise me at all. The breaker bars I have at the house are only 3/8 inch, which is kind of annoying. But like at that time, you know, I could feel flex in the 3/8 breaker bar working on something. And I was just like,
that Milwaukee was too ugga-dugga, and it was off.
It's such a good tool. This show is not sponsored by Milwaukee. No. We just happen to love their stuff.
I borrowed it for a night, right? And I had to, you know, the NC has like five ball joints or three or four ball joints back there. It's like five links in there, as just mentioned. So, and then it has the power plant frame thing, which if you've never worked on Miata, there's like a big beam that connects the transmission and the diff. And they're held on by big, heavy bolts. And so I just took that Milwaukee and started hitting everything. And I like to have the dang thing apart in an hour.
Yeah, it was it's a great tool.
It was great.
The other one that I really like, you know, the half-inch one is great. But I use the, like, quarter-inch drive one for, like, just putting long screws into anything at the house if I need to hang something up or, like, frame something out. Quarter-inch impact's awesome for driving screws.
Oh yeah, super good, super good. But so like all that was to just tell you that I have a bet with Adam that that Milwaukee will take off the lugs on his RV. He doesn't think that it will.
I bet you it would. We should do this.
We're going to. Luke has one.
I'll bring mine.
The adapter. Yeah. So we're gonna do that tonight or tomorrow night, and I'm gonna watch that Milwaukee take those lugs off that RV. Because Adam was like, if it does it, I'm going to buy one. I'm like, well, you're going to buy one because it's going to.
It's such a good tool. The other one that I kind of like is the, I've got the, like, the mini cutoff wheel tool.
Oh, that's cool. Do you have the M12 ratchet? I have that. I love that.
I do not have the M12 ratchet, but I kind of want it.
It's pretty nice. I mean, it don't have much torque, but for all that little stuff, like taking bumpers off and, interior stuff, like, you know, any 10 or 12 millimeter bolt, dude, so great, right? So great.
I don't know. I think, I have a friend, the person who helps me make the Grid Life trophies is, exclusively Milwaukee, because he's not a car guy, but he does like some woodworking stuff. And, his workspace, he lives downtown Indy. His workspace is a room that's like 5 foot by 6 foot. It's really, really small. So he has everything to try and just be as like modular as possible. And he has, he's got to have like $5,000 worth of Milwaukee tools inside this little closet. But he was kind of showing me different things, and like, it's hard to argue with, you know, just paying a little extra money and having the battery tool to do what you want. Because it's such a pain in the ass to have to plug it in to use it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know, we're always on the track and stuff. It's just nice to have. Before I borrowed that Milwaukee, too, I borrowed a buddy's corded one. And it was like a 200 or 300 foot-pound one. It didn't do it. Wouldn't take the axle off. That Milwaukee was just like... And not only that, it's also smooth too. It's like a smooth operation once it breaks loose.
Yeah, that's really, really nice.
Yeah. So. But anyway, I got all apart. Got the diff in the truck. Got the axles in the truck. So.
So. Worked out. I know that. I think Adam is going to bring his, but I'm also going to be bringing all my stuff and my Apex Pro, and my goal is to put it into like as many people's cars throughout the weekend as I can. Because I just want like a repository of track data to be able to compare like different setups. And as long as drivers are game for it, it would be really cool to see, especially in like qualifying, where people start to separate in terms of fast laps.
I think you're going to see McGrew be a little more competitive this weekend than he has been.
What changes did he make?
So he took off those Penske shocks that were no good. They're the Spec MX5 shocks, and they messed up something on the spacer. They supposedly fixed it, but he fought with those shocks for months, and I kept telling him he needs to take them off. He finally did. He got some MCS triples, which he tested last weekend when he did that wing test. And, the car looks like a completely different car in the video. And he also found that his map sensor had the wires come loose. So he had to fix that. But I think the main thing that's going to be different is the suspension. So, because he was already just a couple seconds off, and he was fighting the car all the way around the track.
Well, he had some hard luck early on with that car. It's a setup that should have been like awesomely reliable. Both he and Eric Meadows have kind of fought with it a little bit, unlike you, which is surprising.
Well, we kind of so both those original motors that blew up, they didn't get junkyard motors like everybody else does, because that's a cool thing with the 2.5 swap is the motors come out of fusions, which they made a million of, and so you can get 4-5,000 mile motors off LKQ for $600. $600 shipped. They're cheap. They're super cheap, and it's not like you're buying a 50,000 mile JDM motor or something like that. And they have 3 and 5,000 miles on them. But when they originally started this build, they wanted to be super reliable, and instead of optimizing, or you know, they wanted to focus on having new stuff, right? So they chose to buy new motors from the motor guy, and both of those motors blew up. So I'm not sure where those motors came from. They're supposed to have come from Ford, but I'm kind of suspect, you know?
Well, I guess one of the perks of buying a junkyard motor is if it works, it's already been kind of run in, and you're not going to have an early failure because, well, the motor's been running.
Yeah, it's been driving for 5 or 6,000 miles, you know, or 10,000 miles, or however many miles are on the car. So, and it's weird because, you know, there's a lot of 2.5 swaps on the forums. I know, but you know, I don't know a lot of race cars with them, but I know a lot of buddies who HPDM and everything like that. Luke and Eric's motors, they didn't blow up from like oil starvation or anything like that. It's not because they're running sticky tires. The rod bolts backed out, and the rod snapped in half. So
that's got to be frustrating.
Yeah, and so you know, I can't help but think maybe they just got to run a bad motors, or they weren't really from Ford, or whatever it was. I mean, who knows? But I have a junkyard motor. Eric Meadows now has a junkyard motor. Luke built a junkyard motor with forged pistons and forged rods. Justin Lee has a junkyard motor. And Jeff Preston has a junkyard motor going in right now. And so we're about to find out. You know, I've got 5 weekends on mine. It's been fine. So
we've been into this thing for almost 43 minutes now, and you got to keep driving, and I got to do some things. I got to prep for the weekend as well. I got to go get my RV and clean it out and do all the things. And I got to pack all my stuff so we can do some podcasts.
All right, man. Well, if you get bored later, call me back. I'll be in the car for another 7.5 hours.
If I can
make it without stopping, then that'll be only one fuel stop.
That's unbelievable. I mean, it's still like $1 million in fuel, but
it's actually not that bad. Gas was $1.65 in Austin, so that was like a $55 fill up, and then this next fill up was the one I just did was $63, $100 in fuel
each way.
Each way, yeah, $200, not bad.
Yeah, the hard part from Austin to like Columbus would be like there's not a direct flight, and there's probably not an easy connecting flight, and so it would get expensive.
Yeah, you know, then you got to rent a car because I can fly on points, but then of course I use my points, and so there's some value lost there because I can't use it for something else. But then I got to rent a car, which is another $200. I'm having more COVID exposure that way, right?
That's true.
And right now, you know, I got my cooler, I got my scooter, I got, I had to bring a diff and axle.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of benefit. The only thing that sucks is the time you take away from work to drive.
Yeah, but right now, which is what's weird, is because it's a connecting flight, and there's not as many flights going right now. So I couldn't have got there any earlier if I flew. Like, I wouldn't have missed I wouldn't have missed less work.
Yeah, well.
Because I left yesterday after work. I left Wednesday after work, and I'll get there Thursday night. And so I might have been able to see a couple more patients before lunch and then flew out at 2 or 3 and got there at the same time, you know? Of course, you just got to be an Iron Man and sit in the car for 18 hours, but I don't care about that shit. It don't bother me. I'm desensitized to it now.
Yeah, I got, I'm driving the RV from Indianapolis up to my hometown near South Bend and doing something in the morning and then driving from there over to mid-Ohio. So I'll be RVing for like 7 or 8 hours tomorrow, probably.
Ain't too bad. Well, I mean, we tried it in the podcast, but I got some more questions. When are you going to track the blue car? Are you ever going to track it?
So I hope so. What I'm doing in life right now is trying to live cheaper. I mean, we got this house in Indianapolis or in Zionsville that we bought decently cheap, and it's appreciated a lot. So
yeah,
I think we're gonna put it on the market in like a month ish. We're gonna try and finish up a few projects and then put it on the market, and the goal is to take a huge amount of debt off our plate. With the amount that we sell it for. So I don't think I've been bashful on the show. We've got a sizable amount of student loan debt, like a lot. And
me too, dude.
If we sell the house, the profit that we get will pay off the student loans. And
yeah, that's nice.
If we get a cheaper house, Ashley would like the opportunity to spend more time at home with the baby. So
yeah.
We're going to try and kill two birds with one stone where we take all that cash, we pay off the student loans, and then our monthly bills go down.
And that is one thing that's cool about therapy, because she's a physical therapist, which is like a sister job to what I do, physical or speech therapy. That's kind of like their speech therapy, physical therapy, and occupational therapy. We're kind of a triad of,
yeah, right. You
know, of care. And what's nice about our jobs is, like, if she wants to stay home with the baby but still work a little bit, she can.
Yeah.
Like, easily.
Yep.
You know, she can work 10, 15 hours a week and still make 40, 50 grand a year, 30, 40 grand a year just working half time.
That's
know?
True.
So that's what's nice about our job, where it's like a lot of the jobs, you know, you can't really do that with. You know, you're either full time or you're not.
Yeah, I think that's the case with where I work. And when all that kind of gets worked out, the intent, I think, I've been giving her a really hard time. For some reason, I can't get past it. I really want a Type R, not to track, but just to like,
yeah, they're cool cars.
Just to have. And I think the expectation would be like, if I bought that car, there's probably no chance that I'd ever get rid of it. So like, you could give it to Sloan when she grows up. And it would be like the old ass
that.
Fun car.
Are you talking about? You're talking about a Civic Type R you keep forever?
Yeah.
Why?
Because they're nice.
Nah, ain't that special? You'd be bored of that thing after a couple of years.
I don't know.
I think it's a cool car though. I think it's a really, it's quite a boring like second car. But I think it's a really cool like daily and you know track sometimes car.
Yeah.
Super useful, four doors, big
hatch,
roomy area inside, hatchback. So
I think if they make the 11th gen SI a hatchback, it would be hard to justify the extra cost of the Type R. I know the Type R is more special, and I know it would probably hold value better, but with the way that SCCA classes the Civic, the SI, it's a competitive autocross car in H Street pretty easily. And so like,
do you autocross?
I have in the past. Yeah. Probably not nationally, but like, yeah, I've done it quite a bit when I lived in Ohio.
Seems like you'd want something that would fit into grid life. That's where you go.
Yeah, that's true. But it's in terms of like competing, I find it exceedingly difficult to do anything at events. I don't even know how Adam gets any track time because I'm always doing something. And so if I go out, it's usually because Matt Williams just like throws me the keys and he's like, hey,
you
take off.
If you cared to make it a priority, you could, you know, especially in time attack, right? Because it's not GLTC. You don't have to race every session, right?
That's true.
You could be a competitive time attack person. I mean, really, honestly, if time attack is going hard for the weekend, if you don't get that lap in the morning, you're not really going to.
That's
you know?
True.
Once it gets hot.
The last time that I really, I took the Civic out at Honda Meet last year, And I had like all seasons on and stock brake pads and whatever. And I was just kind of like messing around. But the last time I like drove hard on a racetrack was with the Evo last March.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like it's a race car. I mean, it don't take that. You really just need some brake pads and some good tires and you could just fart around at events in it.
Yeah. That's kind of like what I was thinking. But then like,
it seems like it's kind of a waste of a good car to not do that at all. You know?
Yeah, I probably should. But at the same time, maybe right now is the best opportunity to do it. But the thing I don't really want to do is I'm on an original clutch and it's got 127,000 miles. I don't want to take it to the track or like drive it to the track as an example, burn it down and then either be stranded or like not be able to show up to work on Monday. Conveniently, at the moment, I work at my house. So as long as I made it home, I could still do my work.
I forget that that's your only car.
Yeah, I mean, things would be different if I still had the Jeep. Freaking Canadians.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotta have a regular, like... I just got to where I'm kind of, like, becoming not a car guy and just a racer now. I'm just like, I like to daily my truck. You know, I can drive through the grass. I don't have to worry about bumping into curbs or sloped driveways. If it rains, I can see over the spray. The lights don't shine in my eyes at night. Like,
well, I think
it's so useful.
My favorite part about dailying the SI is of just like how peppy it is. Like it's I don't know. It's just like a snappy little car. It's not fast.
Yeah.
But like cruising around a parking lot from like 0 to 30 or whatever, it feels pretty agile. And it's a small car, so it's not like the Evo at all, which was a big, like freight train type power delivery.
Well, I mean, I had RSX Type S, right?
Oh, that's cool.
A pretty similar car.
That's very cool.
So I had one of those. I've had S. I mean, I've had all cars like that. I think it's just because I'm actively racing. It's like it makes like the street car stuff less fun, and I've got to where I just rather be comfortable.
Sure. Yeah. Especially if you're towing and doing all that.
Yeah. And I'm just in the car so much. I drive during the day for work because I do home health. And I'm just like, it's like the room.
Well, on that note, I think we should probably end the podcast and we should go do some things. But I may give you a call later.
All right. I'll be here for another 7 hours. Later, yeah. Abe.
See you, dude.
Bye.
Slip Angle was created by Austin Cabot and Adam Jubé, co-hosted by Derek Yarbrough and production by Abram Schmucker, who mixes all of our terrible audio. If you like the show, please rate us and review us on iTunes and come and find us in the pits at a grid live to say hello.